Yeah, it's a denial of sausage attack.
Or if you're like some of our co-hosts, it'd probably end homage. I believe that's how they say it over there.
It's pronounced homage, by the way.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to, what is this, episode 25, a slightly late episode 25, but I will say frippery-free episode of Bad Voltage.
What was that? But are you wearing a bow tie right now? What was that?
I am wearing a bow tie. Right, How did you know?
That's okay.
That amused me enough to make my voice go up at least one full octave. That's fantastic.
That only normally happens when he eats the fine products from the Jimmy Dean company.
Yeah, sausage products.
Fine sausage. Brian, what's on the show?
I don't friggin' know. Oh, we're doing the reversal debate, the final reversal debate, the third and culminating act in a reversal debate. It's going to be epic because you're listening to it. What else we got, Stuart?
I'm going to review a thing called the EasyCast, which is a little video widget thing that you plug in.
Sell it, brother.
The detail is there in the review, man, right? I spent ages writing that.
I spent a week away from my family, and then I flew on a plane back home, and then immediately got on the internet and recorded a podcast in which we discuss work-life balance.
Oh, the irony. And finally, we are going to, a little while ago, a couple of shows ago, we started a competition called Mash Voltage, and we will pick the winner.
Hey, Jeremy, what time is it?
Oh, again!
Is it time for the fine products from the Jimmy Dean Sausage Company?
I think it is. And now, Bad Voltage on a stick.
With panko.
Over the last couple of shows, we've had a thing we called the Reverso Debate, in which Brian and I had a debate and I lost.
Yes, you did.
And then, yes, you did.
Well, yeah, no. Full credit to Brian. So Brian goes through to the final. And then in the last show, Jeremy and Jono had a debate. And this is deeply interesting, right? Obviously, the idea behind the Reverso Debate is that you have to argue a position you emphatically don't believe in as fervently as possible. So Jeremy and Jono both argued their positions. You all voted on the forums, and the score we actually ended up with was 64 each. It's a dead heat, a tie.
Yes.
Right? So some cynical people would point out that means that basically everyone has won apart from me, and they would have a point.
That is precisely.
On the other hand, I would point out that Jeremy and Jono both got 64 points and I got 66, which means even in losing, I'm better than both of them.
Ouch.
That's an interesting point.
However,
we need to
decide exactly how we're going to handle this particularly complicated situation. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to have a three-way.
Yeah, it's not gay.
So the idea here is I will give you each a position to defend. A position somewhat apart from your normal belief of the thing. You will all argue, and you get less time this time, partially because it's the final, and partially because there are three of you in it.
Hang on. So that means you're judging, right?
And I get to judge.
The only one who didn't make the finals is to judge.
By the way, you should have won that first debate.
Yeah, you know? Should have. Yeah,
you really should have won.
Yeah,
I mean,
you totally should have.
Way better than Brian.
Brian,
before you got on here, Aki, you know, you joined late. He said some pretty horrible things about your daughter, by the way. So you know.
Campaigning already.
Although
I would like to say, it is funny that we tied because I did not post a single thing about the debate. And I just let, you know, my debate stand on its own while you went all kinds of negative, posting on all kinds, abusing your social media members.
I did.
And Brian jump in on your defense. And we still tied.
Hold on a second, guys. It's worse than that. Jeremy's right here, because not only did Jono go negative, shame on you, Jono, for going so negative.
You just
hold
me
on
to
a second. I have the floor. You need to be quiet for a moment, Jono.
Okay.
Jono freaking Bacon flew all the way to South Korea just to find anyone he could who would vote for him. He actually went around and badgered poor innocent people and said, go sign up for the forum now and vote for me. And that is the only way that he managed to tie.
Jonathan Bacon, is this the case?
There is, to be fair, a slight kernel of truth to that. I did not fly out to South Korea specifically for that reason, but I did ask a guy called Guy Martin, to perform the vote that tied the debate. So thank you, Guy. You're a scholar and a gent. Your payment's on its way. And by the way, I did not go negative, right? How is offering to spend more money on charity going negative? I was going to...
And as a side note, Jono, you posted negative pictures of Jeremy. Brian, me, posted negative pictures of Jeremy. And in the end, Stuart even posted a negative picture of Jeremy. And yet, amazingly, Jeremy managed to still tie with all three of his co-hosts fighting against him.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
We love you, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's all a lot right. of love.
Okay.
So, no, absolutely. I mean, meanwhile, I can understand Jeremy's point of view here. It must be terrible to have all three of your co-hosts having a go at you the whole time, because I've got no idea what that's like.
Yeah. Speaking of which, by the way, before you got on the line earlier on, Ack, as well, Jeremy, I don't know what this term means, but he used the word blumpkin in relation to you as well.
I don't even know what that means.
That's not even a word, right? Bacon,
I've said it once and I'll say it again. Okay. You are a terrible, terrible person.
Transparent attempts to influence the judge.
Let's do this. Let's do this reversal debate.
Right. Okay, so the reversal
Stuart,
debate.
You're in charge. Lay it on us.
Us, given that we're a technology show, I think we should talk about technology. So, your positions to defend. Brian Lundduke, you are to defend the position that one only needs desktop, laptop, computers, right? Mobile phones, tablets, they're all modern, pointless fripperies. None of them are anything like as good as an actual proper computer.
All right.
Jeremy.
Fripperies, by the way, is just a fantastic word.
One aims to please.
Just to get that out of the way.
Jeremy, you are to defend the opposite viewpoint. You are to defend the idea that we are living in the post-PC era, that nobody needs a desktop or a laptop because they're relics of the past. One only needs a mobile phone, maybe at a push, an Apple tablet or something, but you don't need a computer with a keyboard on it. That's pointless. Also, use the word fripperies if you can manage.
I will try to work in fripperies.
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Jono, some people might think, now, hang on, right? You've got a two-sided debate, and yet there are three people in it. Jono, you are to defend the idea that one doesn't need technology at all, right? In the last 50 years, the amount of housework that people do has not dropped one iota. We do not work 1 hour less than we used to. Technology might be pretty and shiny, but it hasn't actually brought any benefits to the world, and that's the position you are to defend.
Dude, don't argue the point for him. Come on now.
He needs all the help he can get, given his pathetically transparent attempts to bribe the judge have failed so dismally.
Yeah, but in his defense, the judge is a pretty nice guy.
Keep it up. So, I'm going to give you each a chance to make an opening statement, and then a chance to rebut one another's statements, and then a closing statement.
Who do you want to go first?
So, I think we'll put Brian first. Brian, your opening statement, please. Keep it to 30 seconds or so, right? Don't go on.
When I am working, I just use a desktop. I don't use a tablet. I don't use a phone. When I go out, I leave that shit home. I like flexibility and power and speed. Only true desktop PCs give me what I need. Sure, phones are great if you just want to tweet about your great big crap or what you might eat. But if we're out at dinner and you yank out that tablet, I'll punch you in the mouth and drop you like a bad habit. So you've got a tablet. Great. Big whoop-de-doo. Here's a list of things you can't fucking do. You can't edit photos in any reasonable way, and you can't type a document and actually get it done today. You can't run a real development suite to compile all that code, and even if you could, you'd look like a chode. I hope you can recover from having your dreams crushed to smithereens. If you'll excuse me, I'll be over here running a fuck ton of virtual machines. Now, the idea of not having a computer at all is too stupid to even talk about, so I won't. Lunduke out.
I take it your desktop computer does not have a timer, by the way.
Should we just stop now?
No. We'll carry on. Jeremy, your opening statement, please.
Well, that's a difficult to follow up that one. I did not have a pre-prepared poem for this, but I do think that this debate is kind of a microcosm of our opinions in general, right? Brian too far to one side, Jono too far to the other side, and me right in that meaty center where the correct answer usually is, right? Desktop computers... And this day and age, just a waste of resources, that those things are just going to end up in the landfill, and we don't need more things in the landfill. And no personal electronics at all. There's no reason to go back to 1647. But getting things in on a phone, you can do almost everything you can do on a desktop, including edit photos and do all those nice kinds of things. But you don't have to get a quill out and start writing parchment or things of that nature. So I think just using your phone, it gets everything you need to get done. It's a little bit more environmentally friendly, and I think it's the right answer.
Nice. John O'Bacon, your opening statement, please.
Let's be honest, right? Technology, it plays a part in our lives. No one is denying that. And a reasonable amount of technology is useful in the world. However, what worries me more than anything are the significant negative effects on our social skills and on our lives, right? So, for example, it's been massively reported that technology can have a negative effect when it comes to isolation, social skills, obesity, depression, poor sleeping habits, pollution, increased bullying online and offline, lack of privacy. People have become more deceitful over the years, a warped sense of reality, stress. People have even developed fucked up phone thumbs from texting. People have got weird social boundaries, as anyone has seen at a conference. Also, lack of sexual boundaries as well. Social bonds, constant distraction, neck and head pain, shortened attention span and addiction. Lack of empathy, more violence, higher energy consumption, and development issues in children. Some would say neurosis. And also, sometimes a loss of hearing and eyesight as well. These are all the kind of things that happen with technology. And I believe that technology has a reasonable place in the world. But when you overdo it, when you spend all your life on a desktop or a mobile or a tablet, these are the things that can happen to you. No, thank you.
And I would now like you to rebut one another's points. You may interrupt one another as much as you like for this, and I'll call a halt to it when two of you are dead.
Brian, your poem was shit.
Jono, my retort to your no technology thing. Here's some quotes. Here, listen to this awesome show called Bad Voltage. Here's a link. You can't do that, you lose. Jeremy, I've got a desktop. On my desktop, there is a terabyte hard drive. If I want another terabyte hard drive, I add another terabyte hard drive. I then have how many? 2 terabyte hard drives. How many terabyte hard drives do you have in your mobile devices?
While your math is flawless, that would not explain why there's over 5 times as many cell phones in the world as PCs right now. There's more mobile phones on the planet than there are TVs at this point.
So if there's that was five times as many cockroaches
on different trajectories
as there are people.
Your trajectory is going on a pretty much straight down slope, while mobile phones, straight up slope. Did you know, this is actually a true fact, there are roughly 7 billion people on the world. I would hope you knew that one. There are well over 5 billion people have access to a mobile phone, right, which is the correct answer. For comparison, 3.5 million people have access to a toothbrush, and only 4.5 billion have access to a working toilet. So cell phones are even more important than that. So that's the answer.
But here's the thing. Cell phones are important to a degree. They're certainly more important than desktops. But you know what? Using the built-in computer in our brain is more important than anything else.
Are you recording this on a wax cylinder right now?
You've got a couple of terabyte disk drives, Brian. I've got 2.5 petabytes in my head, right? Suck on that, okay?
I love how Jono keeps arguing as if he's in this at all. Memory. Hey, there, Jeremy, how much RAM does your tablet have? Maybe 2 gigs? That's adorable. I don't get out of bed in the morning for less than 8 gigs, son. Suck it.
8 gigs of RAM and nothing to do with 6 of them. It doesn't, you don't need it all. Have you ever gotten out of RAM error on your phone?
Yes.
Is that a thing that even exists?
Yes, it totally is.
You're worried about problems that don't even exist.
You're filling up
the landfill, I'll be enjoying myself, walking around. Well, you'll be sitting in your office, it'll be all nice outside, and you can't leave I'll be in the park doing something fun on my mobile phone, still getting work done.
Now, you mentioned the park, by the way, the meat space out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's this whole world that surrounds us, right?
There is.
That's full of not technology.
Okay, we gotta get rid of the hippie guys.
There's all of these amazing things. You can go out, go and hug a child, go and kiss a goat, go and see the world, whatever it might be, right? You're locking yourself. It doesn't matter. Desktops, phones, tablets, it doesn't matter.
I'm not saying you should put your phone down every once in a while, but to not have that option at all is a lose.
I believe in human contact. It's more important than anything. Simple as that.
My argument rhymed. I stand.
So, thank you, gentlemen.
Now, wait. But, Stuart, if we are completed here, before you make your judgment, Stuart, I have a prepared statement I would like to read that has nothing to do with my personal stance. If I may, I would like to ask your permission.
Hang on.
I guarantee both of the competitors would give you each
10 seconds to summarize either your own argument or the failings in everyone else's, if you prefer. But you only get 10 seconds. Brian, if you can fit your closing statement pre-prepared into that, that's fine.
I will do my best.
Okay.
Gentlemen.
So we'll let Brian go first then. So you have 10 seconds. Go.
Gentlemen, both of you have put forth a noble effort, and for that you should be commended. Up until now, I have won all the various bad voltage competitions. This has been profoundly selfish of me, and more to the point, it has been unfair to all of you. Today, both of you put forth a good effort. You clearly tried incredibly hard. I'm still reading. And this sort of effort and courage should be rewarded. It is with this in mind that I've decided to remove myself from this competition and officially take myself out of the running. Whomever is ultimately crowned the victor this day, feel proud and know that everyone wins sometimes. Thank you.
That was now graciously done by ignoring the rules.
No, hang on a second, right? When he got to the 10-second mark... He hadn't recused himself. Sorry, dude, you're in.
I'd
rather win this fair and square anyway, so I'm fine with that.
The big problem here is, what am I meant to do to punish him for flouting the rules? I can make him not win, but he already doesn't want to, so I'm not sure what happens now. But anyway,
maybe it was a little reverse psychology at work there.
That's actually surprisingly clever, I have to say, Brian. Anyway, Jono. 10 seconds of closing statement to rebut the failings of your friends or defend your own point. Go.
I'm not saying that technology doesn't have a place in the world. It does have a place in the world. All I'm saying is that we should spend time with each other and cherish the most important things in life, which is human contact, love, and engagement.
Very good. Fitted in 10 seconds. Also, presumably your audition for Miss World. So well played. Jeremy,
that was beautiful, man.
Your 10 seconds.
I totally think Jono should win now.
Jeremy,
I would agree that
go.
Human contact is very important, but considering Brian most certainly recorded this on a tablet and not a desktop, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say Jono did not record this on a wax cylinder. They both have clearly specious and capricious arguments, and therefore the winner should be clear.
And close. Well played.
Man, now, that was really great, too. Maybe Jeremy should also win.
Can I just act before you go on and make your decision? Can I just, I'm not trying to influence your decision, but I am. Please, please don't let Brian win for all of our sanity, right? He will literally explode with smugness.
That is absolutely true. And you know what? Both Jono and Jeremy deserve to win sometimes. I think that they should. I think they should have that chance. They should be able to go to bed tonight feeling proud. And I want
that. I think
this
is all frippery, and you should go on whoever gave you what you think is the best argument, as I said last time.
You know how in beauty competitions, they tend to have a Miss Congeniality award where all the contestants vote for who they think should win rather than the judges?
Yeah.
I think Brian wins the Miss Condescending Award for this particular competition. All right. Well, I have considered my opinion and I have come to a verdict. And I have to say, I was quite impressed with Brian's poem. Although I do recall seeing, I think it was Eminem in a film, having a very severe pop at someone for having pre-prepared a bunch of rhymes rather than coming up with them on the fly. If you come up with it on the fly, Brian, I'd be very impressed. But I don't believe you did.
I don't believe I did either. I came up with it a few minutes before the show.
Very good. Jono, I admit you had the stickiest wicket to bat, and you did an admirable job of defending it.
I tried.
But presumably, you could have done better, right? Why didn't you show up to the show with some hemp trousers on, for example?
Maybe I'm wearing hemp trousers. You haven't seen me from the waist down.
I'm prepared to bet a tenner right now that you're not wearing hemp trousers.
Do you really want me to stand up right now?
I'll add 10 to that one.
So you're already 20 quid out of pocket, man, which is like, what, $400 or something? So...
All right, move along.
But I have to say, the person who defended their argument with the most aplomb was Jeremy Garcia. It was.
Oh!
Jeremy wins. I declare, Jeremy wins.
Well done, little guy.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
Ah, bless his cotton sock.
So, as an extra thing, I believe Jeremy is donating to charity, yes?
That's already done, yeah. Charity Water won. I started the poll, as I said I would, and it was not a very stiff competition. Charity Water ran away with it, but it's a great charity, and before the recording, I donated $100.
I will
nice,
also,
man. Good on you.
I will also throw in $100 into Charity Water. It's an excellent cause.
It is.
I'm going to drink some ice water a little later on. But first, I'm going to finish this Pepsi.
I'm going to go and water my lawn. All right. So I guess, well, congratulations, Jeremy. Thank you very much, sir. Earnestly deserved.
It was a hard fight.
You did kind of draw the short end of the arguments, but.
You know what? Before we recorded, like, to be fair, you were absolutely destroying me in the vote. And I used filthy tactics to try and get my way. I liked how a couple of the people in the forum really took objection to that as well. They're like, yes, I cannot believe it. He tried to gain the vote. How dare he use charity as an excuse for him to win?
Indeed. Clearly, Jeremy's policy of aiming for the meaty centre has won him a competition. Well played. Once upon a time, there was an idea that it would be nice to show stuff on a screen without having to plug a cable in. This idea was a good idea. Many people admired this idea, wished for it to happen. Sadly, many people then built the idea in about 30 different ways. Apple have got AirPlay, Chrome has Chromecast, the Wi-Fi Alliance have Miracast. Of course, none of these things talk to one another because it would be stupid to build a thing which everyone can use when instead you could build a thing that only your friends can use. Once again, the technology industry demonstrates that it's basically the film Mean Girls but with more microchips. That strategy is so fetch. Most people who want this sort of thing care because they want to watch films on a big television. That's fine, assuming your life goal is sit slack-jawed in front of the idiot box, passively consuming whatever Hollywood throws at you. Me, my use case is, as ever, different. I want to give presentations without having to carry a laptop bag. I want to take my phone out of my pocket, show its screen on the big screen. So my goal here isn't sending video, it's using the big screen as a second monitor, but without wires. And I've got two phones. So I bought an EasyCast. Basically, Chromecast uses its own proprietary protocol, AirPlay uses its own proprietary protocol, Miracast is a documented spec for this kind of protocol, and the EasyCast is a cheap knockoff device which does all of them. So my Android phone can show its screen on it because Android supports Miracast. My iPhone can show its screen on it because EasyCast supports AirPlay. All is sweetness and light. There are compelling reasons to buy this kind of knockoff device, right? They tend to support all manner of features which more established brand names want to charge you a ton of money for. So the thing you get isn't a cheap car, it's a fully operational Challenger tank which does everything you could possibly ever want. The compelling reason to not buy one of this sort of thing is you don't know how to drive a Challenger tank. And so it just sits in your front garden and rusts, because if you try and use it, you'll just hurt yourself and hurt others. And this is me saying this, right? I have some experience with computers. Having said this, the EasyCast device itself isn't actually that bad. That it can receive screens from both Android and iOS makes it, by itself, more compelling than anything else on the market. If a larger brand built a better, more reliable thing which did that, I'd have bought that instead, but they don't. And it's not too bad to use. It's got a male HDMI connector, micro USB slot. You plug the HDMI connector into your HDMI monitor, or into one of a bewildering variety of adapter leads from your leads box. You plug a USB cable into the micro USB slot for power, and the device starts up, displays its welcome screen. It's its own little Wi-Fi network. So you connect to that Wi-Fi network from your phone with the name and password on the screen, and then use cast screen on Android or AirPlay on iOS, and lo, your screen is shared. That's it, and it works. This is actually pretty good stuff. It handles changes screen orientation, it's sharp, it's clear. You can teach it itself about the wider wireless network, at which point your phone can then see the internet again. Everybody wins. Of course, nobody can keep things simple. There is an EasyCast app available, which knows how to connect you to the device, and then offers a distressingly large bunch of poorly implemented crap built-in features, like a browser and video and music and that sort of thing. That means instead of casting your phone to the EasyCast, you're running an app on the phone and it's controlling a similar app on the EasyCast. I personally don't think there's any point whatsoever in that, but it's the way they recommend you use it. Because every electronics company is of the opinion that the hoi polloi can't do anything unless there's an app for it. None of this stuff works right. Occasionally it throws some kind of a wobbler and doesn't work, at which point you unplug it and plug it back in again and it fixes it. It's apparently running a very cut down Linux distro inside it, because it uses UDHCPD and things like that. But the firmware isn't public, and upgrading it from a computer is about as easy as teaching calculus to a potato. It's got an upgrade feature built right into it, but you have to use the mobile app to access that, and it's wildly unreliable at correctly displaying video when it's connected through an HDMI to VGA adapter. But to be honest with you, I think I'm inclined to blame that on the steaming pack of bollocks that is the video industry rather than this specific device. So what's the bad voltage verdict on the EasyCast? If you need to share a screen from multiple different devices and you're prepared to exercise your technology skills, you can use this and nothing can beat it. If you want something simple, or you are something simple, look elsewhere.
So I have a quick question about this. I can see this being quite useful when you're out giving talks, right? You got your phone, and you know, I have a PDF on my phone of my slides, and I'm assuming that I can plug this thing in, and I can tap my phone to switch to the next slide, and it means I don't have to carry a computer around with me.
Correct.
When you're displaying a slide in landscape on the screen, does it look... Is it shaped like a phone landscape screen? Is it like too wide? Because a phone is not like a normal kind of a widescreen kind of... I don't think it is like a normal widescreen when it's in landscape. Does it look like a normal kind of presentation?
It does the same thing that if you've got a widescreen laptop and you plug it into a... You know, you've got a 16:9 laptop and you plug it into a 4x3 projector, which does 1024x768 or whatever. And so you get black bars down the side.
Right.
It does that.
But it looks pretty high quality.
It works fine. I mean, I have myself sat here and put a PDF on both of my phones and cast it to the screen with this thing. That's precisely absolutely what I want it for.
Yeah. And how much is this thing?
Like 15 quid or something. One of the interesting things is that EasyCast is not itself a thing. They're a company, iezvu.com, right? And they appear to make the core hardware. They make the core firmware, and I don't know whether they make the hardware or license it or whatever. But when you go and buy an EasyCast device, they come from this huge variety of no-name manufacturers, but they're all running the EasyCast software. So I don't know whether these huge variety of manufacturers all license it off this company, or whether they're all actually the same device, just with some different company's name stamped on the outside or what. And I don't care, because it was like 17 quid.
Right. Going up in price. Yeah.
Something like that, right? I forget exactly.
Turns out it was actually 99 quid.
But... No, it wasn't.
But you said in your review that it's got HDMI plug in it, USB. USB powers it, HDMI plug. And then you'd need a HDMI to VGA adapter
you
to plug into.
You keep saying HDMI, and it keeps making my brain reboot itself. It's just an HDMI plug, man. It's just an HDMI plug.
HDMI. HDMI, yeah.
How do you say,
remember,
how do you say cool
the language,
whip,
by the way? Cool whip. Cool.
Okay, whatever. All right, so continue.
So... In almost every single presentation that I've ever done, it's been a VGA connector to the projector.
It always so is, fact, right?
So the fact that the HDMI to VGA connection thing is bollocks is frankly discouraging.
Now, bear with me. First of all, certainly every projection place provides VGA, and it's what most people plug into. But we are increasingly starting to see projectors which have HDMI.
Yeah.
Which is encouraging, or they have DVI. Perhaps I go to a lot of web conferences which tend to have Macs, but they always tend to offer DisplayPort. Yes, everyone's got VGA.
I'm thinking this because I go to Linux conferences and freaking HDMI doesn't work for a lot of Linux laptops.
Bear in mind that the computer I had before this one I'm talking on now was a laptop which only had HDMI out. It didn't have VGA. So,
right.
Scary.
So I got quite used to looking for an HDMI port if there was one. And we're increasingly starting to see those occur. The other thing is HDMI to VGA adapters are complicated because you're basically going from a digital to an analog signal. Right, there are some adapters which don't do any transformation on the signal at all. So sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. There are some which do a whole bunch of work. They actually transform the signal because the thing is a tiny little computer in itself, but they need power and they work quite reliably. And right. It's extremely difficult, unless you're some kind of actual video expert, which I am not, to know where to point the finger of fault for this stuff.
Right.
And, you know, really, that's not a fault of an HDMI little dongle. I mean, that's not, whether you have a laptop or this little dongle, it's going to be the same problem at any conference. Exactly. That's fine. I mean, either way, you're probably going to have to carry three adapters with you just to ensure that you can display your friggin' slides.
It's probably Mir's fault.
It is. In fact, it probably is.
Yeah. If they'd adopted Wayland, it would have been a lot easier.
It's because there's a CLA. all right. Well, So it sounds like overall it's pretty cool. It's just got some rough edges, right?
About these devices, and the Chromecast is the same way, and I'm sure this is a technology problem battery-wise, but these things need to be rechargeable, not you need an extra to carry around that USB cable. The Chromecast does the same thing, and it annoys me. There should be no USB cable you should just plug it in and it should work.
One of the things interesting here is I've looked into this a bit because I thought to myself, you know what I would like? I would like to have one of these, but I would like to have its own power on board rather than having to plug the cable in. Absolutely. So my first question was, why can't it take power off HDMI? And the answer is because that's not what HDMI is for, right? So that you can't get power out of it. But you need a reason. I mean, the thing is a wireless network, right? It needs power. So I think it would be possible to put battery in it. Now, that's useless for the Chromecast's use case, which is you plug it in the back of your big television in the living room and then you never touch it again.
But for an hour presentation. Yeah.
It's ideal for what I'm talking about, where you charge it up. The battery only needs to last 2 hours. Right. And I
just get one of those, portable battery things.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I actually tried this after you started talking about it, and I grabbed one of these little 2200 milliamp batteries, this little, cell phone awesome, boosters, a super little cheap one, and it works great. So I plugged it into my Chromecast to see how long I could run my Chromecast. I ran it for like 3 hours and just gave up and figured it was good enough. So it ran fine.
I have done precisely the same thing. And my intention, the next time I do a presentation, is to try doing it from my phone with the EasyCast device and a portable battery.
So you won't take your laptop to a conference?
So I won't take my laptop to a conference because then I don't have to walk around the whole damn day with a laptop bag that I don't need.
Nice. Wicked nice.
That's pretty cool.
All right, how many episodes back now, guys, it was it that we actually told people to do this match voltage thing? Is it 2 episodes, 3 episodes,
two or three.
It feels like a while. We extended it, whatever. Here was the deal. People were supposed to take audio clips of us from this show, from past shows that we've done stupid things on, edited them together in whatever way they wanted to, post them up on the forum. We look at it and all four of us come together, all of us bad voltage shenanigans-y dudes, and decide on a winner. Now, the cool part about this is that winner gets a special prize, and that prize being something fancy, and by fancy I mean fancy with air quotes around it, from each of the Bad Voltage hosts' home, sent to you via the postal service. Now, you don't know what it's going to be. It could be, as we pointed out previously, it could be a can of beans. You just don't know what it's going to be. Well, we've got a winner, ladies and gentlemen. We've figured out, through very scientific means, who the most amazing audio engineer on the planet is, and it is, what's his name? Scott Warren? Is that his name? Scott Warren?
No, that's incorrect.
Rich Warren.
Rich Warren?
Yeah. Loose. Sorry, Scott, for getting your hopes up for a microsecond there. But no.
Rich Warren. Our winner.
Rich Warren. All right.
Rich Warren. So should we take a listen to his piece of magnificence?
I think we should.
Gloriousness.
All right.
The winning
mashed voltage
entry comes from Rich Warren.
Nice. Oh, Rich Warren. Cool.
Why is that cool?
He's giving you a booting.
You know what we should do? I think we should start Bad Voltage.
Brian Lundu.
Brian
People
Lundu.
Know you, right?
I guess so.
Who are you?
I'm a writer over at Network World and Linux World. Let's see, what else? I got to be honest, I would kill a baby.
And everyone agrees with me.
Right. And I should point out real quick for those of you who haven't seen it, it is available on Brian's YouTube. And the first thing you will immediately notice when you watch it is himself in the shower. So I give you that mental image, listener.
And I've seen it. I'll be honest with you. I don't really want to, talk too much about him taking a shower because that conjured up all kinds of awkward.
That seems bizarre to me. I said you were just in his flat, weren't you? Just like extra knobs to fill around with when he's in there.
Oh, no. I get it. The men of Bad Voltage right there.
Wow. And you're beautiful, Brian. I want to be able to go in and see the hardware.
All bets are off, man. I don't know how this is going to go down.
I can't do that with your hardware.
How awesome is that? Anyway, that's rad. Yeah. We could do it however the boys wanted to.
Anyway, so we're wrapping things up. So we should probably talk of some of the cool little things that are going on in the community, shouldn't we?
In the forum, the whole room practically jumped to their feet and was unanimous in, oh my God, we hate Stuart.
And the reason you know this is the case is precisely because everyone has for 40 years.
Even myself, I have to say. Yeah,
by the way, Mr. Lunduke, you deserve a bit of credit here as well. We've just started doing it in the shower. So if you get along to badvoltage.org/ the fat man in the shower, we have like a group picture of the four of us.
Is there a place we've all been?
Boobs. 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 Boobs.
Don't like that one language. Not a fan.
God's.
All right.
Anyway, so that's it. Big thank you to
Rich Warren.
Yeah, no, it's all fantastic. We're all off to change our avatars to a big heart with a picture of
Rich Warren
in the middle of it.
Oh, yeah.
See you on the next show.
Yeah. See ya. To be fair, we did actually talk about boobs when Ack did his shower gadget review. That was absolutely freaking brilliant.
Nice.
It was a decent episode, honestly. That's not too bad. I think we should put that in the can and just release that sometime in the future when we're feeling lazy.
It is kind of better than the actual show itself, which is slightly disappointing.
A fair bit.
And yet unsurprising.
I just want to, before we go on and talk about, you know, prizes, I just want to say on behalf of everybody, big thank you to Metal Freak, Scott Linux, and also Winter27 for submitting entries. It was great to have everybody. I know it's a bit of work putting these things together.
That was awesome.
Some spent more work than others, obviously.
But all of their entries are on the forum, yes?
Yes, they are. So go to the forum and you'll see a category called Mashed Voltage. Click on that and then you'll be able to see all the entries. And hopefully, if Ack remembers, they'll be linked in the show notes as well. So, what are we going to send Rich? I mean,
we're
going to keep it a surprise?
Let's keep it a surprise. Now, Rich, we need you to get us your mailing address. Now, I know that's a little bit nerve-wracking, giving your physical address to the four of us, but we promise to not show up and do weird things. We will, however, mail you weird things. And what we'd love to do is to mail this stuff to you, and we want you to take pictures of it and post it on the forums so everyone can see what wonderful things that you've been gifted from such four magnificent dudes as us.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll reach out to you, we'll get your address. Congratulations, Rich Wareham, and thank you everybody for your entries. we're obviously a technology podcast, and you know, our audience, a lot of people in our audience work in technology. And one of the things that we've talked about from time to time in the past, when we're not recording, is work-life balance, because all of us on the show have got pretty busy jobs. And I know it's very important to all of us to make sure that we take time to hang out with families and whatever else. But some people don't get that balance quite so well. And we thought it could be interesting to have a chat about how this works. So there's certain companies out there, like Google are a good example of this, and Samsung, and I think Sony and Facebook, where they basically provide every every convenience that you could ever need at the place of work. They have hairdressers, and they have creches, and they have restaurants, and all kinds of stuff. In fact, I was in South Korea, and I went to the Samsung City, and it's literally a city with people from Samsung all working there. And the idea is that people very rarely leave, you know, when they're at work. So, you know, what is the, like, what do we think about this? Like, there's one thing about enjoying your work and making an employee's life more convenient, but is work-life balance a thing anymore? I mean,
I think it's interesting because Facebook wants to make that campus where everyone basically never leaves. Google does anything in their power. They give you lunches and massages, and they have doctors and dentists and everything. They don't want you to leave. So I kind of wonder if we're trending back towards, you know, 100 years ago or so, when the steel and auto manufacturers had those deliberate company towns. I almost wonder if we're going back in that direction. And if that's the case, is really the innovation of American capitalism the company town? That would be a sad thing.
So, I mean, I never spent any time at Google, but from my time at Microsoft, which I worked at Microsoft for quite a few years in like the late 90s, everyone just kind of lived at Microsoft. I mean, it wasn't a city. It was just a bunch of friggin' office buildings, but like they provided us with cots. They provided us with dinners. They provided us with, you know, kitchens, but the kitchens were basically a microwave, a fridge, and just like an endless expanse of cold, you know, soda pop to keep us as caffeinated as humanly possible. So we were working like 60 and 80 hours a week, and it was in a main campus that where it was situated, it took so long to get to it because of traffic and roads to get to anywhere that anyone could afford to live. You were spending an extra, you know, 10 to 20 hours a week on the road to get to and from your job. So by the time you start calculating in amount of time at the job, amount of time driving to and from the job, you really actually didn't have any time for an at-home meal, let alone even just watching a TV show with your wife and family. I don't know. I'm okay with the idea of like a cool little town that GM sets up somewhere where everyone can live, and it's super easy to go see your family in your lunch break. But I don't like the idea of spending too much time working.
I think Jeremy's point about the company towns, I think, is really interesting, because, I mean, one of the things about the company towns, but it was nice. Fine, you got paid in Mindscript, and you could only spend it in the company store.
Oh, that's right. Ernie Ford
told us. But equally, it was great that they would build a community. The more insidious thing about company towns, certainly here in the UK, and I think in the US, is that when a big industrialist built a little town to house the factory workers, they would also use it as a method of influencing the lives that those factory workers would have. So they'd build a town and then not put any bars in it, or put loads of churches in it, or something like that. And the problem was not particularly creating a company town. Everyone's happy with the idea that right next door to work, you've got a hairdresser's and a really, really good canteen and really good places to hang out. It's when you use the fact that everyone's there all the time to try and influence their behavior. And one of the things which worries me about this whole get everyone to stay in the office as much as possible is that it's a life where I stay in the office as much as possible is not open to me if I have young children or a family I want to see. It's oriented around the idea of young professionals with no connections. And well, that kills diversity.
You're right. You're totally right.
The thing as well is work-life balance is actually really hard for a lot of people, I think. I mean, we all know people who don't get it very well at all. And I think the part of the challenge there is the unbelievable peer pressure that those people feel. I remember when I joined Canonical at first, and, you know, in 2006, when Canonical was much smaller, every single person in Canonical was just a rock star that I looked up to. They were like my heroes. And these people worked all the time. And I felt like I didn't fit in if I didn't put the same kind of hours in. And that continued. And as Canonical got, you know, to be a much bigger company, I had a much more diverse group of people coming in. It became a bit less of a culture, but certainly in those early days, there was quite a lot of peer pressure. It wasn't deliberate. It was mainly the pressure I imposed on myself. And I think that I'm not alone in that viewpoint. And I think what happens is when it's difficult to get that work-life balance, that was hard enough with me working from home. Working in one of these like campuses or towns must be really difficult when, you know, that unbelievable pressure to be there all of the time. And that psychologically worries me, because, you know, to me, like, work is one thing and it's good and it's good to have a career, but people miss out on so much of life by only working all of the freaking time,
right? Yep.
And I think the balance is probably different for everyone. That's the one thing. I don't think there's a right answer. I think you know, that balance is basically an indifference curve, kind of on a time allocation, and between the various things, be it work and friends, family, hobbies, all that stuff. And I think each one of us has an indifference curve that's correct for us, and that might be very incorrect for other people. And I think as you age, things definitely change. As your family situation changes, things are going to change. And as you experience new things, that curve's going to change for you. You might find a hobby you really like and say, you know what, I didn't mind working 75 hours before, but now I really want to be doing this other thing, or now I have kids, so it you know, shifts your curve over. So I think that's where the age thing comes into a point, especially is the more experience you have, the more non-work things you're going to be exposed to for that curve to shift a little bit.
What? I just had a thought as well. Like, you know, like, have you heard about people who's prisoners who come out of prison and then they say they find it really difficult to settle back into society?
Institutionalization.
Right. And I imagine that there must be cases where when somebody lives in an environment like that and they're working all the time and spending all their spare time in that company culture environment, and then they either get fired or they get made redundant or they leave. That must be really difficult.
Yeah,
it's kind of like those, like the Foxconn workers in like the factories in China building all the iPhones, where they live there, they're housed there, they live in barracks, and they have to put like suicide nets up so they won't kill themselves. And I mean, that's the obviously the extreme, and we all think that's a bunch of garbage, but. But I don't know. I think the closer you get to that, just the worse life gets. Like, I mean, when I was working 80 hours a week, it was awful.
Right? Imagine you're a Google person. You say, okay, most firms have a canteen on site. So what we decided to do was hire the best chefs in the world and make sure the food is really, really good. And most firms have a place where you can sit and hang out with people for meetings or whatever. And Google say, okay, we're going to make our meeting rooms and our meeting areas and the things you can do the best in the world. And then we're giving them a booting for doing that. I think part of the thing here is there are two different ways of looking at it. There is a genuine desire to say, well, people are going to be at work anyway because that's what they're paid for. So we ought to make their lives as pleasant as possible while they're there, which is an admirable thing to do. But it's when you start saying, okay, also conveniently, if we make work more compelling an environment, people will work more. And it's finding the work-life balance, though, is in finding the balance in between abusing your power of making work nice to keep people there and just making work nice, which is a good thing.
I think you've hit the crux of the debate there, is that from Google's perspective, I'm sure that their view is, look, it's up to our employees to enforce their own work-life balance. We want to provide all the facilities of a great workplace. And if our employees decide to spend all of their time at work, then that's their own prerogative.
That's pretty passive-aggressive, though. I mean, clearly Google wants them spending more time working.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, that's what I would imagine to be the public response to that kind of thing.
Right.
However, the question is like, to what extent do you look beyond the needs of the company and look at the general care of the employee? Because I have the same view towards terms and like small print terms and conditions. Like, there's a lot of people who say, well, it was in the terms and conditions, right? That's printed tiny font at the bottom of a page that you can't read. And my view there is, you're not taking due care and attention to inform the person of the implications of a decision. You're just saying like, oh, well, I've covered my ass. What I don't know is, like, I'm with you, Ak. Like, on one hand, it's great that they do this. They provide a really nice workplace.
It's insidious.
But on the other hand, On the other hand, like, and maybe they do. I mean, for all we know, like, these companies have a program there where they keep an eye out for people burning out and having issues, you know, like personal issues and stuff like that. Maybe that is the case. I mean, what do we know?
I think honestly, a lot of these perks are... Oh, go ahead, Brancho.
No. You go ahead first.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of these perks tend to be, from my perspective, concentrated in the Bay Area, just because I think people that live in the Bay Area have to spend such a vast portion of their income on housing that these perks have a little bit of a different meaning there.
No, hang on, that's true.
Bear with me here. Just because I don't really understand the American housing market, surely the Bay Area is expensive, don't get me wrong, but surely New York is just as expensive, right? I mean, it's New York.
The Bay Area flew by New York like it wasn't moving.
Yeah, but
it's now by far the most expensive place to live in the United States.
It's crazy.
Why would anyone live there? They're all mental.
Yeah, they are all mental. I've got a buddy who lives down there. He literally spends, I think, 75-80% of his paycheck on his housing, and he does not have a nice place to live. No, that is certainly true. My personal take on it is this: the idea of a work-life balance is a weird invention of corporations to diabolically control the workers. I think it's a horrible concept. There's no such thing as work-life balance. That suggests that work is not life and life is not work. We simply should just have a good life. We should live a good life and do work that we want to do. And when companies, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, whoever, spend all this time and effort promoting how great it is to spend time there and eat there, and they have the best chefs and everything, that's weird, passive aggressive insidiousness to get people to spend more time at work. And then
that
they can promote.
That doesn't follow at all.
It totally does.
What's important is to have a good life. You are going to spend some of your life at work, unless you're independently wealthy for some reason.
Not at work. You're going to spend some of your life working.
Yeah, okay. You're going to spend some of your life working. Google have made that time that you're spending working more pleasant than it would otherwise do, which reinforces your point of having a better life. And yet you're using that as an excuse to give them a kicking.
Here's the two possibilities here. One, you go to work at Google and they have a very average cafeteria. It's fun. You can eat lunch there. It's convenient. You eat lunch, you get out, you get back to work, you go home. Two, they have a really just wicked nice chef that just prepares crazy meals for you and like sushi and like brings them to you all the time. And you eat lunch there and you eat breakfast there and you eat dinner there and you have tea there. Cause I know you like tea like 4 or 5 times a day cause you're British, and you just do all this stuff all the time. And it's fantastic. Then what happens is the company uses that as additional motivation to keep you there, and not just motivation, but a little bit of pressure. Companies always do this. Microsoft does this. Google does this. We've heard it plenty of times. That's how they utilize it. And what ends up happening is people spend more and more of their time there. And that's fine if the time is good. However, that does mean that you are precluding yourself from spending time anywhere else. If it's not a place that your family can coexist with you, then it is not life. You are not living. You are spinning your wheels, wasting time, getting stressed out, not making it any further, and probably not earning an hourly wage. You're probably salary, so it doesn't matter if you're working 40 or 80 hours, and there's no real net benefit. You have a worse life because of all those perks.
Being nice to someone is not by definition exploitative, right?
It's not being nice, though. That's the thing.
My friends do not make my life more pleasant when I hang out with them in order to insidiously keep me away from my family. It doesn't have to be a conspiracy.
One would hope your friends have a different motivation than a corporation that employs you, but probably should start bringing it into the station, as Mr. Bacon says there. I don't think we're going to get you guys to agree during this segment, that's for sure. But what I am curious about is what the people in the Bad Voltage community think about this. I would encourage everyone to go to community.badvoltage.org and start a thread about work-life balance. And what do you think? What's your experience been with the companies that you work at? And what's your general take on the concept of work-life balance?
Yeah, the one thing I'd love to hear from our community is, and please feel like you can anonymize the company, but if you work for a large company that has one of these big campuses or a city, I'd love to know what your experience is. Just to see how it balances out. Because with the exception of Brian, the rest of us have never worked for a large company like that, I don't think, and been in that environment. And I think that might be interesting.
And just to be clear, I'm not talking about perks like having a Keurig machine in the coffee room. I'm talking the big stuff here, people.
Nespresso.
And that, thankfully, brings us to the end of this sausage-laden episode of Bad Voltage. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to this most righteous show. It couldn't be here without you because you listen to it. And much like the tree, we would not fall down in the forest if you didn't hear us. That didn't make any sense, but you like watching this show at badvoltage.org.
Now, nearly no sense at all.
And I love your attempt to try and sound smart and thoughtful.
I totally did.
It's completely backfired.
An attempt to sound profound. Actually, I think it made a negative amount of sense. I genuinely feel stupid of having heard you say that.
You know, it's funny. I have not. That's not the first time I've heard that today. I would like to say congratulations to Jeremy. Jeremy, you really nailed it today. And you know what? Don't let anyone take this victory away from you. Just because someone else who had a lot of rhymes abdicated their victory to you, it does not mean that your contribution was any less spectacular. And I just wanted to say,
I knew you were
well
abdicating
done,
to try and hold it over us. You would have won, I'm sure, if you hadn't.
And I have to say, the fact that Jeremy won and the fact that he's sending me $100, WaterAid, $100, is fantastic. And we very much appreciate it. Well done, Jeremy.
Well, no, wait.
Someone had to come up with the combo breaker, or else Brian was just going to keep winning indefinitely.
Wasn't the prize, isn't the prize that the winner gets to pick the name of this episode or something like that? Is that what we decided?
I think that was included.
Something like there was a prize. I think so.
We kind of added that after the fact. I think
Bad
we were just doing
on
this
a stick
for the hell
with
of
no
it.
Fripperies. That's an easy one.
That's what we're calling it now.
That's the episode right there.
And that's a lot better than
on a stick with no really with no fripperies. I like.
Yeah, really.
Hey,
I was
loser
terribly
bacon,
worried.
Jeremy
I'd have to
spoke.
Find. I thought I might have to find another worthless item in my house and send it to Jeremy. But no. Oh, sorry, not a worthless item, because I might send you something fantastic, Rich. Absolutely.
I'm going to find something amazing to send. Although this does remind me, there was a couple of comments on the forum asking us if we skipped a show, and we did not skip a show, but we are not recording at our regular time. So what does that mean?
Ah, what does that mean? Indeed. Ah,
almost forgot.
Oh, God.
I
was actually thinking of already changing my avatar to the logo of the fine Jimmy Dean Sausage Products Company.
You know what? And you know what? It's not fair to make Jonna do that by himself. I'm going to do that too, because I stand with my brother wherever he is in the world, and I'm going to do it too.
I appreciate that, Brian. Maybe we should all. Why don't we all change our avatar to the logo of the Jimmy Dean Sausage Products Company? Because they deliver great products.
I can think of two reasons why products. Not. Right? I can't buy these sausage pancake things here. They don't sell them. And secondly,
you've got to start somewhere.
I'm not sure I want to be sausage advocate. Brothers with you lot, right? I've crossed sausages with people enough in my life. I don't think I want
Dude,
to do
we
it
have
again.
Been- That Thanks ship for that sailed mental about image. 14 years ago.
I should point out, for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, if you don't happen to follow Mr. Lunduke on Twitter, he recently had a very nice back-and-forth exchange with the Jimmy Dean Sausage Company over their sausage on a stick wrapped in pancakes or something.
Okay, two things, guys. First, Jimmy Dean's sausage and pancake on a stick is freaking delicious. Two, if you tweet at Jimmy Dean, I swear to God, they'll reply to anything and they will hold a conversation with you. I played word association with them. Go look at my Twitter thread. I've got a picture of a screenshot in there and it was just spectacular. It wasn't anything I did. It's all Jimmy Dean, guys. Give that a try.
It's
fantastic.
This is what we're going to do. People of Bad Voltage, I think it's time that we all make the Jimmy Dean Sausage Company. What's the Twitter Twitter name?
I think it's
Brian?
Just at Jimmy
at Diabetes.
Dean. At Jimmy Dean, right?
So, at Diabetes.
So, or potentially so, Diabetes.
On a stick. Right, what you need to do, people, is go and tweet at the Jimmy Dean Sausage Company Send them some nice words and use the hashtag #badvoltage, please.
Or just tag @badvoltage in it as well.
Yeah, like, tag like @badvoltage.
Say, hey, @JimmyDean, @badvoltage sure does love you guys. Whatever you want to say, make it funny, make it a pun.
Yeah.
Just strike up a conversation with them about the weather. I don't care what it is. Tag Jimmy Dean and Bad Voltage.
You can even
in the
point out
line,
that episode 25's name is an homage to one of their very products.
Yeah, it's a denial of sausage attack.
Or if you're like some of our co-hosts, it'd probably an homage. I believe that's how they say it over there.
It's pronounced homage, by the way.
All right, we're going to end it right there. But seriously, Jimmy Dean, forums, community, etc. Thank you, and good night.
Thanks for listening.